Introduction to The Last Shuttle. This story was written in honor of the first shuttle, the Columbia, which made it such a magnificent flight in April 1981. In anticipation of its success, a newspaper in Florida, whose circulation region included Cape Canaveral, asked me to write a story for them. They gave me the title, The Last Shuttle, and when I asked them if they had any significance in mind with respect to that title, they said, "No, write anything you please, as long as it fits that title." So I did, and it appeared in the April 10, 1981 issue of the newspaper supplement entitled Today. Story 14, The Last Shuttle. Virginia Ratner sighed. There had to be a last time, I suppose. Her eyes were troubled as she looked out over the sea, shimmering in the warm sunshine. At least we have a nice day for it, though I suppose a sleet storm would match my mood better. Robert Gill, who was there as senior officer of the Terrestrial Space Agency, regarded her without favor. "Please don't mope. You've said it yourself. There had to be a last time." "But why with me as pilot?"
"Because you're the best pilot we have, and we want this to be a snappy finish with nothing going wrong. Why am I the one who must dismantle the agency? Happy ending."
Happy ending? Virginia studied the busy loading of freight and the lineup of passengers, the last of both. She had been piloting shuttles for 20 years, knowing all the time there would have to be a last time. You would think the knowledge would have aged her, but there was no gray in her hair, no lines in her face. Perhaps a life under constantly changing gravitational intensity had something to do with it. She looked rebellious. It seems to me that it would be dramatic irony, or maybe dramatic justice, if this last shuttle blew up on takeoff, a protest on the part of Earth itself. Gill shook his head.
"Strictly speaking, I should report that. But you're just suffering an acute attack of nostalgia."
"Well, report me."
"It would tab me as dangerously unstable, and I would be disqualified as pilot. I can take my place as one of the 616 last passengers, and make it 617. Someone else can pilot the shuttle, and enter the history books as the person who..."
"I have no intention of reporting you. For one thing, nothing will happen. Shuttle liftoffs are trouble-free."
"Not always." Virginia Ratner looked grim. There was the case of Enterprise 60.
"Is that supposed to be a stop news bulletin? That was 170 years ago, and there hasn't been a space-related casualty since. Now, with anti-gravity assistance, we don't even have the chance of having an eardrum broken. The roar of rocket takeoff is forever gone."
"Listen, Ratner, you'd better go up into the observation deck. It's less than 30 minutes to liftoff." "So? Surely you're going to inform me that liftoff's fully automated, and that I'm not really needed."
"You know that without my telling you. But your presence on the bridge is a matter of regulation and tradition."
"It seems to me that you're nostalgic now, for a time when a pilot made a difference and wasn't simply immortalized for doing nothing but presiding over the final dismantling of something that was so great." And then she added, "But I'll go," and moved up the central tube as though she were a fluff of down rising in an updraft. She remembered her salad days on the shuttle run, when anti-grav was experimental and required ground installations larger than the shuttle itself, and when, even so, it usually worked jerkily or not at all, and space hands preferred the old-fashioned elevators. Now the anti-grav process had been miniaturized till each ship carried its own. It was never fail, and it was used for the passengers who took it for granted, and for the inanimate cargo, which could then be moved into place with the help of frictionless air jets and magnetic levitation by crewmen who knew perfectly well how to manhandle large objects without weight, but with full inertia. No other vehicles ever built by human beings were as magnificent, as complex, as intricately computerized as the shuttles had been, for no other ships had ever had to fight Earth's gravity. Except for those early ships which, without anti-grav, had to depend on chemical rockets for every last bit of power. Primitive dinosaurs.
As for the ship that dwelt in space alone, kicking off from a space settlement to a power station, or from a factory to a food processor's, even from the moon, they had little or no gravity to contend with, so they were simple, almost fragile things. She was in the pilot room now, with its array of computerized instruments, giving her the exact status of every functioning device on board, the site of each packing case, the number and disposition of every person among the crew and passengers. Not one of those must be left behind. To leave one would be unthinkable. There was a 360-degree television view of the panorama outside the ship, and she regarded it thoughtfully. She was viewing the place from which human entry into space had taken place in the old heroic days. It was from here that people had hurtled upward to build the first space structures, power stations that limped, automated factories that required constant maintenance, space settlements that barely housed 10,000 people. Now, the vast, crowded technological center was gone. Bit by bit, it had been pulled down, until only the one installment remained for the departure of the last shuttle. That installment would remain standing, after the ship was gone, to rust and decay as a final sad memorial of all that had been. How could the people of Earth so forget the past? All she could see was land and sea, all deserted. There was no sign of human structure, no people, just green vegetation, yellow sand, blue water. It was time. Her practiced eye saw the ship was full, prepared, smoothly working. The countdown was ticking off the final minute. The navigational satellite overhead was signaling clear space, and there was no need. She knew there would be none. Touch the manual control. The ship lifted silently, smoothly, and all that had been worked for over a period of 200 years was finally accomplished. Out in space, humanity waited on the moon, on Mars, among the asteroids, in myriads of space settlements. The last group of Earth people rose to join them. 3 million years of hominid occupation of Earth was over. 10,000 years of earthly civilization was done. 4 centuries of busy industrialization was ended. Earth was returned to its wilderness and its wildlife by a humanity grateful to its mother planet and ready to retire it to the rest it deserved. It would remain forever as a monument to humanity's origin. The last shuttle lifted through the wisps of the upper atmosphere, and the Earth stretched below it and would now be shrinking as the shuttle receded. It had been solemnly agreed by the 15 billion residents of space that human feet would never stand on it again. Earth was free, free at last.